On ABC New South Wales, this is The Country Hour with Amelia Bernasconi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for your company here on The Country Hour this Wednesday afternoon, and it certainly is a big one. We are here live at AgQuip for the 2026 event, and certainly a beautiful day, which I know you can't organise, but everything else organised within an inch of its life to make the largest agricultural field days go off without a hitch. We've seen a pretty big lineup at the Murray Grey steak sandwich tent, but if you've got some other suggestions for me, I haven't quite got to have lunch yet, and I know they've been fighting. We almost had the Droughtmaster team drag us in to their barbecue today. That's one of the many features, of course. You've got to be well-fed to make your way around the AgQuip grounds here. It is a huge, huge setup. We've seen some pretty impressive machinery here this morning, but you're going to meet across the hour. I will hear from one of the event organisers very soon. We've also had some pretty intense meetings. I shouldn't say intense, but some important meetings at the New South Wales Farmers Tent this morning. They've been speaking with the Biosecurity and the Agriculture Commissioner, and they're also going to grill some politicians this afternoon. So join us across the afternoon. You can text through as well. Or if you have got us on the ABC Listen app while you're walking around AgQuip, come and say g'day. But you can text always 0467 922 684. Here are live at Gunnedah from AgQuip on day two. We are joined by Craig Chapman. Well, the head organiser, is that the official title? Craig, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Amelia, and welcome.
Thank you.
Quit. Yeah, it takes a team to put this together, and it's a small team of five, but as it gets closer, our team numbers, we get a lot of contractors in, and there's a big team of volunteers from Rotary. We leverage off the support of the Gunnedah community as well. So, yeah, many hands make light work.
That's it. Well, I know you couldn't get a room in Gunnedah because I'm staying in Tamworth tonight, but, you know, the place is packed out months in advance. You can see, you know, like people are streaming through here. How many exhibitors do you have on hand this year?
Yeah, so there's around 750 exhibitors, and we've been hovering around that number for the last 2-3 years, but basically post-COVID, which is really good. We have a mixture of supporting businesses that come back year after year, and there's a little bit of a small turnover. It might be 12 to 15% of new exhibitors each year, which is great because it brings something new each time.
Yeah. What is it that really takes your eye, and when you do get five, you like to go and have a sticky beak for yourself?
Look, I was just down at the drone demonstration.
Fantastic.
And that, it's probably not new technology now, but within that sector, there's new technologies coming through. I attended the UNE panel this morning, which was really valuable, great information for students particularly. So it's just a really wide variety of demonstrations, of panel sessions, of product, of services. Basically, anything from a wire strainer to a weather station you can have a look at here.
That's a good tagline. Craig, you mentioned there the UNE and sort of stuff for those older students as well, but I remember coming here as a school kid, and I've certainly seen lots proudly donning their uniform on a school excursion today.
Yep.
What does it do for those young people to take in something as quite extraordinary as AgQuip?
Yeah, look, and you're right. A lot of our exhibitors particularly recall of their memories coming here as school students. And I think what it does, it makes a connection between a student and a career in agriculture. And a career in agriculture doesn't necessarily have to be on the farm. You can be offering services or products like the 750 exhibitors we have here and play a very active and valued role in agriculture without being a farmer. So these support businesses and agribusinesses that are here today represent that.
Yeah, even media as well, our friends at The Land over there as well, I saw. Craig, it's always a good time of year as well to do a bit of a vibe check, for lack of a better phrase, on the farming community. And it's been up and down this year. How would you describe, I guess, the mood amongst particularly those primary producers?
Yeah, look, and there was a bit of concern, several factors, fuel prices and electricity prices and others. But the vibe has been really positive over the last 2 days. We just unloaded a trailer that came up from Melbourne with more fuel tanks because they sold out yesterday.
Wow, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, so they desperately needed to get more up here to fill their display with. So I'm not saying that there's not tough times for farmers and things are all roses. But, yeah, I think an event like AgQuip, where you can come, talk to an expert, talk to someone that has been intimately involved in that product, I suppose build a relationship too. Digital era that we live in and we accept that. We've got an app that helps people get around, so we embrace the digital technology, but there's nothing replaces that one-on-one conversation, touching and feeling, and talking to an expert.
Absolutely. And we know that not all the sales will be done today, but all the networking, like you say, testing it out, that look and feel, and then when you are in a position to make that big purchase, you know, down the track, you know, they know who to call.
Absolutely. And we do a lot of research of our attendees each year, and the sales made during the event are normally doubled post-event.
Yeah, wow.
So farmers do a lot of research. So that's not surprising. And the value and the cost of what they're buying at events like this, or looking at events like this, yes. So a lot of thought goes into it. But, that post-event sales absolutely is a big feature.
It's a big investment. Got to do their homework.
Absolutely.
Craig, before I let you go, what breed of steak sandwich are you having today?
Now you put me on the spot here. I cannot. I've got over the 3 days of the event, we make sure we support every single one. I can't single them out because I've got mates across all the breed societies.
Yep.
And if I single one out, I'm going to get absolutely hammered. But look, all of our staff, we make sure that we support all of them. I know that they've had a crack at the Charolais and the Droughties and the Murray Greys. Mm-hmm. The Devons we've also had a taste of. We make sure we get around to all of them. But you cannot beat an AgQuip steak sandwich.
Very good. Very diplomatic. Well, we'll let you go and make your decision for today, and we won't broadcast that. Good on you, Craig. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Amelia. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig Chapman from the ACM team, putting on AgQuip, the incredible three-day event, where we are broadcasting the Country Hour live from today. We'll be back for a little bit tomorrow, but here till 1 o'clock today. So if you do have some sort of radio on at the moment, you're floating around, come and say hello. It is 12 past 12 on the New South Wales Country Hour.
Join your local ABC team when the sun rises each weekday. Our team is out in the community. We curate the news, weather and your local rural report. Join us for breakfast right here on ABC Local Radio.
It's 12 past 12 on the New South Wales Country Hour. You've been hearing as well, you will be hearing from some more politicians, but Tara Moriarty, the New South Wales Agriculture Minister, was here yesterday before she jetted over to Walgett today, where she's meeting with landholders to discuss the upcoming feral pig eradication pilot there. Now, the minister has faced some criticism announcing that trial last month. There was a lot of talk around fines to landholders if they do fail to comply with that program when it begins in November. The minister says she will consult with representatives from national parks, Crown Lands, as well as local council and private landholders. And she says that consultation will be used to form more details and objectives of that trial as we get a little bit closer to November. The minister did tell a press conference here at AgQuip yesterday that the Walgett pig trial and gun legislation are both good policies.
We really respect the work that farmers do. They're incredibly important in New South Wales. The gun buyback scheme that we have announced as government over the weekend is something that has been talked about over the course of this year, and it follows the terrorist attack, the tragedy that occurred at Bondi Beach, where people were murdered in broad daylight on Bondi Beach, shot. We introduced emergency legislation into the parliament to change the laws in relation to gun control. That was late last year, and we've been working on that. There's still more work being done on getting the details right, but including the drafting of the regulation, which will be out for consultation. We've been talking to stakeholders, including farmers and sporting shooters and people involved in pest management. And in listening to farmers and people involved in pest management, we've actually increased the allowance for the amount of guns that people can use if it is for work purposes. So the limit that will be in place is 4 guns, but if you are a farmer, a primary producer, people working in pest management, you can have up to 10. And if you're involved in the sporting areas, you can apply to the police commissioner for special exemptions. We are working with farmers. I understand that people are frustrated, and this is change in relation to gun control in New South Wales. We'll continue to work with the sector. I will continue to ensure that the voices of farmers are heard loudly around the cabinet table. But the community expects that we are dealing with the amount of guns that are in circulation in New South Wales following the attack that occurred on Bondi Beach. The regulations are being drafted. They should be out for public view either later this year or early next year, where the details will be provided. These are positive policies where we are accommodating the views of farmers and people involved in pest control. I absolutely acknowledge that weapons of this nature are an essential tool for farmers to use and for pest control. I'll be in Walgett tomorrow holding a roundtable with stakeholders about the pilot program that we're running across the region for dealing with feral pigs. It's a really good policy. I commissioned the Independent Biosecurity Commissioner to give me some advice on how we can better deal with feral pigs in particular, but dealing with pests. She's given some great advice that we need to do this more at scale over whole landscapes. So we're looking at trialling or running a pilot program around the Walgett region because there are a significant number of pigs there. The program won't start until November. We're going to do, and we already are doing, months of consultation directly with landholders. I want to hear from people about their ideas for how to do this. The government will be putting resources into it. Having these exemptions in place for people to have up to 10 guns per person means that people will be able to have access to the weapons they need to carry out the work that they need for controlling feral pigs.
That was the New South Wales Agriculture Minister, Tara Moriarty. Here at AgQuip at a press conference yesterday, we couldn't catch her today, unfortunately, because she has gone off to Walgett, and we hope to get a bit of an update from correspondence with New South Wales farmers. I know they're meeting with her today. Hopefully, we can bring you an update here this afternoon on the New South Wales Country Hour, where we are at AgQuip. And joining us now is the Shadow Agriculture Minister, Brendan Moylan, and nearby Northern Tablelands MP. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming over. I mean, we talk a lot about feral pigs, but if we could perhaps just step back to the gun buybacks announced by the Premier over the weekend. I know that has been a hot conversation here at AgQuip. What have you been hearing on the ground?
Look, I've been hearing exactly the same thing that I've been hearing for months, that it's not farmers that were the cause of the tragedy at Bondi. Bondi didn't happen because farmers have too many guns. And I think the whole process that the government's been involved in, from recalling Parliament before Christmas, letting Parliament rise without any regulations even being thought of, and then going through a buyback that's announced on a Saturday night, the whole process has been a smokescreen. And the reality is that the government failed in its objective to keep the community safe in the lead up to Bondi, and then in order for the Premier to look like he's doing something, he's now penalising regional New South Wales. I think the laws are an absolute farce. I think it's a political smokescreen. I think it's terrible policy.
Well, we heard there just the opposite from the Ag Minister, saying it is strong policy, it is good policy, and it sounds like it is moving forward. So what would you like to see as, I suppose, safeguards for farmers who, you know, might have certainly more than four guns in the safe, but for that essential work? I guess it's never been this big of a conversation, has it?
Yeah, it hasn't. And, you know, the buyback that's proposed is going to be bigger than John Howard's buyback after Port Arthur. The reality is, and I think all of us that live in regional New South Wales, and those of us who have guns, I should disclose, I am a licensed shooter. I've got a firearms license, mm-hmm. but you can't shoot a rabbit with the same rifle that you shoot a pig. And I know in Sydney, if you say, well, I've got 10 rifles, people
Sounds
are quite...
extreme.
It does. Mm. But the reality is out here, out in regional New South Wales, 10 rifles for a farm is not a lot. The other issue with the cap of four for non-farmers, and this has been getting a lot of media lately, is that quite often on our farms out here, our pest control is done by both the landholder, the farmer, but also by recreational shooters. And again, a recreational shooter is likely to have more rifles than four. I was chatting with a farmer in my electorate the other week over at Armidale, and his recreational shooters come up from Sydney, and they clean up his place of foxes, of rabbits, of pigs. And if we're going to limit then the ability of those guys to do that work, then what's the alternative that the government's actually proposing in order for us to properly control vermin out here? It's again, it's bad policy and it's directed at entirely the wrong people. It's the government needs to just pull up, admit that it got it wrong, admit that it was rushed, admit that it has no plan to actually pay for this buyback. You know, there's no budgeted, there's no line item for this buyback in either the state or Commonwealth government. So how are taxpayers going to pay for it? I think the government needs to pull up, admit it got it wrong, and actually go back to the drawing board and have a look at what caused Bondi and stop penalising farmers.
Certainly more conversations to come. You're hearing from Brendan Moylan, the Shadow Agriculture Minister for New South Wales. You touch on there, of course, it goes hand in hand with feral animal control. We did hear some stats from the Minister this morning. I believe there's been 1 million feral pigs taken out of New South Wales since they came to government, I believe was the time frame. And Minister's gone out to Walgett today. Of course, we've had a lot of coverage on that trial coming in November. Your party, the coalition, has put forward a bounty as part of a big package as we do race to an election. But let's look at Walgett. I guess that is a huge area with, like so much of the state, has had a significant feral pig problem. What support have you given to that trial coming up, or what do you make of it?
Yeah, look, I mean, going back a step, I'd like to give a shout out to my wife. She cleaned up 3 on the road out at Palamalawa, so she's doing her bit.
And the local panel beater will be enjoying that too.
The Inverell panel beater's having a good time there. The feral animal problem is so out of control in New South Wales. It's not just pigs. It's not just pigs. I can drive in my electorate between Bingara and Bundara and see multiple wild deer, goats, foxes. We've got, you know, obviously pigs right across Western New South Wales. But the bounty that the coalition has announced, the trial, it's one more tool in the toolbox. And the reality is a bounty won't really move the dial until such time as there's been a lot of pressure put on that local population. So we have seen a bounty, that trial work out at Tottenham. Mm. There were some good results from there, so I think hopefully we can build on that. But it's only one tool in the toolbox. What we're seeing out at Walgett, I think, and the feedback that I've had from Walgett farmers, was that there wasn't a lot of consultation with them about the scheme that the Minister's announced. And again, that seems to be a bit of a... it seems to be the usual course of action, that something's announced and then we consult after. The consultation should have been done first. And I don't think that an approach where we are solely looking to fine landholders is one that's going to work. I don't think sticks work. I think carrots work. And the carrot here should be a significant investment from the government into addressing this problem and actually making some regulatory changes. So there is no reason why a farmer who has farmed for 20, 30 years... there is no reason why he or she should have to go into a course to access 1080 baits. They know how to use the baits. So there's regulatory change there. And again, another fundamental change that the government should be making is actually making Crown land part of the solution, because what we've seen, particularly in the western end of my electorate around Moree Mallawar, is that there'll be a shoot. Farmers will go to their own expense of putting a shoot on, and the pigs will just go and camp on Crown land, whether it's a stock route, and then they'll just come off straight away once that shoot's finished. And so we need to be actually able to bait, trap and shoot on Crown land. And, you know, South Australia has a really good model down there where Crown land down in South Australia is the absolute pinnacle of feral pest control, where in New South Wales, our Crown land is the absolute dog's breakfast of feral pest control. So the government needs to look at that as well. You know, it has to be a multifaceted approach. And so far, you know, we can talk about 1 million pigs being taken out, which is great, but we're not shifting the dial. It's not enough.
They really are in plague proportion. Like you say, they're the Crown lands certainly need to be part of it. And the Minister did acknowledge that all the public lands that this, hopefully what we see at Walgett will be replicated, will work well. She's out there consulting today. We'll speak more on that. But Brendan Moylan, the topic of the day, if we can turn to some lighter news, the steak sandwich of choice for lunch.
Look, I grew up on a Pull Hereford farm, so that's where I go.
Thank you.
I go to the white
Someone's
face.
Given me one simple answer, because everyone else is being too diplomatic.
No, Hereford's. Okay. I mean, look, it's Shadow Ag. I've probably just annoyed a few people there, but that's just, I'm just sticking to what I grew up with.
Sticking to your guns. Appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Brendan Moylan, the Shadow New South Wales Agriculture Minister there, with one vote in for the Herefords and one another vote supporting all the breeds when it comes to the steak sandwiches. We are here live at AgQuip this afternoon. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. It's 24 past 12.
Every community has stories worth sharing. ABC Your Say is your chance to join the conversation. Tell us what's on your mind. Visit abc.net.au/yoursay.
The New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Amelia Bernasconi with you this afternoon, live from AgQuip on the New South Wales Country Hour. We're set up in a beautiful little sunny spot out here just near the New South Wales Farmers tent. We are joined by the President, Bec Reardon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Basically in your backyard, not too far from Moree today.
No, not too far from Moree, the centre of the universe.
So I've been telling everyone the Hunter is the centre of the universe. But anyway, we'll work that one out.
You're
later.
Very confused.
What was the drive like coming down today? Like, seeing the countryside as
well. Well, funnily enough, on Monday I drove from Brisbane to Moree and then Moree to here. And look, there's a lot of stress crops out there. We really need some rain. It's not looking great. We need that in crop rain, which we just haven't had.
Yeah, and a lot went in late. We had obviously not just the weather, but the impacts, the pressures on fertiliser and diesel at the start, during the cropping window.
It is. It's a costly exercise. We ourselves didn't think we were planting until we got that very late break. We haven't done a full plant, but we've planted what we can. But we didn't have that full moisture profile, and that's what's really starting to hurt with this weather now.
Yeah, and, a lot of the people in this part of the world that come to AgQuip are from those cropping regions. Have you noticed that sort of, I guess, slight dullness to the mood, or...?
I think there is, it's not looking like a great year up north. There's some great crops down south, but up north here, certainly after coming off a record year where we were happy with the situation, it's not so great up here. I mean, you've got whole areas like Round Walgett, which actually haven't even planted this year. So there's probably a bit less money around, and I think we're probably seeing that at AgQuip a little bit. ABARES come out saying that they expect that the average broadacre farm is going to lose $16,000, or 70% of the broadacre farms are going to lose money this year. So, it's probably, it's one of those things. We are financially going through a bit of a tough time at the moment, but we will come out of it at the end of the day. But let's hope that it gets better next year.
Let's hope so. We'll have the Bureau on in a minute, but certainly clear skies here at AgQuip today. But looking at the social element of AgQuip, and that is such an important part of coming to a field day, especially the country's largest, how many people have you been able to connect with and just have a chat?
I can't count, but needless to say, I've been absolutely flat out, which has been fantastic. I'd much rather be busy, but it's just been really good to have people come in and actually talk to us about what their issues are, but we're also giving them opportunities. We just had the Ag Commissioner here. We've had the Independent Biosecurity Commissioner here. We just heard Brendan talking, so he's in there now chatting to members. We had Minister Moriarty here yesterday. Yeah. It's really great to have those people here and giving our members, those people who are on the ground living the experiences, a chance to actually communicate how it's affecting them.
And what has been most topical in conversations you've had?
Oh, look, guns. I'd have to say guns, firearms are top of the list, especially after what happened on the weekend with the announcement of the buyback prices, which quite frankly are a pittance of what farmers have invested in these firearms to control pests and get effective and humane pest control in place. So that is definitely top.
Yeah, were you able to speak with the minister about that? Particularly, I know we've heard a lot of blowback on the prices of those firearms.
Look, we have had a chat. We certainly expressed that we think it's a very poor move on their part to, one, potentially not come back to us and not listening to us is the main issue we've got. New South Wales Farmers has been in there for months explaining why we need the firearms that we need, the problems that we're going to have with some of the proposed regulation changes and the legislation changes, but they don't seem to be listening. And this buyback is just another example where they haven't listened. And it's not fair on farmers that they are now going to be paid severely under what these firearms are worth through no fault of their own, when they've really bought a lot of these firearms to meet their biosecurity duty and control the pests, which is a benefit to the environment. It's a benefit to just biosecurity, diseases, everything. There is a real social benefit in this.
I'm sure, I hope that those conversations will continue. You've also got some of your members out meeting with the Minister at Walgett today. We've spoken so much about feral pig control and that project there. What have you, since that was announced at your conference a couple of weeks ago, what sort of input do you think will be shared around the table with the Minister today?
I hope it's a productive one. I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that is what has been happening with pigs. So we need to start looking at a more landscape approach, a more coordinated landscape approach, as well as an integrated pest management. Farmers are spending thousands individually, but not necessarily in a coordinated manner because they don't have the capacity. They are willing and they show that by how many dollars they're putting on the table and spending. But if we can coordinate it, that's a great step forward. But you don't do that by bringing out the big stick. You do it by working with these landholders. And you also look at the public landholders who, for the large part, are not doing their part. And it's really those private landholders and farmers that are picking up the burden here. So let's work with farmers and ensure that those public landholders also have to meet their obligation.
We did hear, and I was listening to the Minister this morning on the Rural Report, and we just replayed a bit there. She's very committed to, yes, the public lands coming fully into the scope as well.
And we fully support her and congratulate her on that move. We think it is absolutely vital, and it's one of the most frustrating things that our farmers, particularly those next to public lands such as National Park, are telling us.
Yeah, absolutely. You're hearing from Rebecca Reardon. She's the President of New South Wales Farmers, here with you on the New South Wales Country Hour, where it's almost 12:30. We will head off for some news headlines and weather soon. But native vegetation mapping, I guess people learning the maps and deciphering the maps, that's been really big with those changes to the Act there as well.
It is, and given that these native vegetation maps become legal instruments on the 1st of September, it's really important farmers get out there and understand, is the map across their property correct? Because basically, if they're doing something that they can't do under a map, even if it's incorrectly mapped, they can be prosecuted for breaking the law. So we've had a really strong interest in that. We happen to have the, I think it's, what do they call themselves, the map guys here from New South Wales Government who will actually revise your maps. Great. So it's really important that farmers get in. If you are here tomorrow or you're here this afternoon, AgQuip, come down, have a talk to this department, and they can actually help you work through and have a look at your map for you.
Fantastic. And it is in the shade because we're in the blaring sun here this afternoon, Rebecca, but you can sit in there with the shade, talk through the maps, talk to you and the team, and get a coffee or two.
It is great.
Can't let you go without the steak sandwich question. Which breed are we backing?
Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go with Angus only because I had those growing up.
Okay, we'll take that. We've got one vote for a Hereford, one vote for an Angus. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Beck. Rebecca Reardon is the President of New South Wales Farmers. We're just broadcasting outside their set up here with the New South Wales Country Hour today. It is dancing around 12:30. Lovely to have your company. Amelia Bernasconi filling in for us for you today, and Bridget Murphy's been on site with me this morning. And she has our news headlines. Hello, Bridge.
Good afternoon. 5 Sydney Swan AFL players have been banned from playing for the club for the rest of the season. The club has announced Riley Bice, Nick Blakely, Isaac Heaney, James Jordan and Chad Warner will not be considered for selection for the remainder of the 2026 season. The Swans say the actions taken by the club are independent of an ongoing investigation by Victoria Police. Housing Minister Claire O'Neill says suggestions from the Australian Council of Trade Unions to deliver stronger rentals rights and more accessible public housing will be considered. The ACTU is calling for standard leases to increase from 12 months to 2 years and for a national target of 1 in 10 new homes to be public housing. Emergency responders from interstate and abroad are meeting in Melbourne today to discuss the upcoming bushfire season. Authorities warn this summer is likely to bring challenging fire conditions with above average temperatures and below average rainfall expected. And Millie, there'll be more news at 1 o'clock.
Thank you so much, Bridget. Have you worked out your lunch plans yet?
I want to try all the steak that we can. That's my goal for our afternoon. But we'll give the Herefords a crack. I think that's going to be my vote.
I really liked the enthusiasm when we drove past the Droughtmaster barbecue before. So I think, and I don't know that I've ever had a Droughtmaster steak. So.
I don't think I have either. That might be where we're headed.
Alrighty. Anyway, suggestions coming in 0467922684 or any contributions to the program this afternoon. It is coming up to 27 minutes to 1. Bridget Murphy was there with your news headlines. More ABC News at 1. But let's head off to the Bureau of Meteorology and Elenka Duma. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Amelia.
How's it looking across the state today?
Yeah, look, we've got a trough moving across the state currently that is bringing some shower activity mostly to the southern inland and western inland areas. And this system is going to be followed by a series of cold fronts over the next couple of days. So we are expecting this rainfall over inland areas to persist into Thursday and also into Friday as it gradually makes its way into the central and northern inland.
So will that? How much rain will that be bringing and where to? Sorry, Alenka.
Yeah, so today we're the focus of the rainfall is about the southern parts of the state, in particular Riverina, Lower Western, and parts of the far western districts as well. And we could see anywhere from 5 to 15 millimetres fall today, and within that cloud band we also could expect some isolated showers. So we could see some isolated falls closer to 20 millimetres over the next 24 hours, particularly about that southern inland area. But as we head into Thursday and Friday, we will see that area shift a little bit more eastward. So tomorrow the focus will be more towards, once again, the Riverina southwest slopes, but even parts of the central west as well, which once again could see another 5 to 15 millimetres into Thursday. And about the Alpine region, we could see slightly higher falls of around 20 to 30 millimetres. And then by Friday, we see that system push more so into the northern northern parts of the state and about the central west, so parts of the upper western, central west slopes and plains, and possibly even isolated falls about the north New England and northwestern areas on Friday could see further 10 to 15 millimetres. So it is expected to be fairly widespread, this rainfall. Most locations will receive some rainfall west of the divide, just probably more likely to see higher falls about the southern and central parts of the state than the northern inland areas.
Fantastic. It is very hard to imagine a drop of rain falling here at Gunnedah today, but I know that that will be welcome, like you say, in the northwest in the back end of this week. So thank you for the update, Alenka. Anything else we should know before I let you go?
Look, just keep an eye on any warnings. We are expecting thunderstorms, so we could see some thunderstorm warnings over the next few days. They will be fairly isolated, though. We also have a flood warning current for the Murray River with minor flooding expected at Barham from tomorrow and right through to the end of the week. So just keep an eye on those flood warnings as well.
Will do. All righty, Alenka, thanks so much for the update.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Alenka Dumas there from the Bureau of Meteorology with us here at 24 minutes to one on the Country Hour.
Hello, I'm Andy Park. Join me for The World Today. The Swans scandal continues with five players to be stood down for the rest of the season amid an ongoing police investigation. A Thai teenager allegedly murdered by an Australian man suffocated to death, an autopsy reveals. Triple murderer Erin Patterson's appeal against her convictions back in court today. And what will this summer's bushfire season hold? Hear the very latest forecast. Join me for The World Today.
That's coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Right now, you're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. Amelia Bernasconi filling in today and bringing you with us here to AgQuip, where there's been an exciting announcement and always one of my favourites to hear from the Brownhill Cup winner each year. And that has been awarded earlier this morning. We're joined today by Gordon Brownhill. Good afternoon.
How are you, Amelia?
Very well. And we might hold tight while, you know, with bated breath before...
While I get my... It's tough together, yeah, okay.
No, I mean, before we introduce the winner of this year, to learn about the legacy of this and what it was for your family to introduce the Brownhill Cup.
So it really wasn't me, Amelia. It was my father with a few of his compatriots back in 1983, and it was the Livestock and Grain Producers Association and Soil Conservation back in those days, and then we've moved on to the New South Wales Farmers today. So since 1983, there's been many, many, many people that have been awarded it, from individuals through to family farms through to anybody that's actually done anything that's been, you know...
Researchers. We had Steve Simpson over last year.
Yeah, exactly. And but anything that's really, broadly, that's had anything to make agriculture better, especially in the north. And so this year, the Tudgee family have been awarded it. which is really a really close-knit, tight family operation with two boys back on the farm. But I'll let Dave talk about that earlier on, later on. So,
yeah, before we do come to Dave Tudgy, the winner of this year's Brownhill Cup, just before we move on, Gordon, you mentioned that it is about those that are progressing the industry. And I know a lot of people on the land, they're always trying to find better ways, quicker ways, smarter ways, more profitable ways to do things. But it's that sharing with others. Is that what sort of tips the difference?
Oh, well, very much so, yeah. Because it's sort of we're all trying to do the right thing.
You and know? All busy.
And it's really interesting. You know, we're of an age that is sort of exiting agriculture, and there's another generation coming along. So there's really nearly three generations since 1983. And what was done in 1983, which would have been progressive and innovative, is completely different to what it is now. I mean, you only... Can I say the ABC studio is what is it a suitcase?
I call it a studio and a suitcase.
Yeah, I mean this technology is.
We didn't have this in the '80s.
No.
I don't think.
No, and if you said to someone in 1983, would we be steering? You know, would there be someone not steering a tractor or
you
know?
Laugh at you.
Yeah, exactly. And we've gone through the concept of zero till. We've gone through the concept of fertilisers. We've gone through new varieties. We've gone through introducing new crops into the farming systems. It's, you know, there's a plethora of things that have happened, and the award was, like, I wasn't around when that first started, but it was just to actually recognise someone who, or an individual or a family farm or whatever, who had done something that actually made agriculture better for the future generations and future people. And you know, it's a legacy that my father is quite old. You know, we're thinking, is it going to end? But so many people say, no, you've got to keep it going. And you know, it's quite flattering as a Brownhill, as only just part of the Brownhill family, to be still standing in front of you with a microphone, you know, talking about something that has just come so easy for all of us to adapt and do.
Well, Gordon Brownhill, don't go too far away, but we will hear from Dave Tudgy of the Tudgy family, this year's Brownhill Cup winners. Congratulations.
Thanks, Amelia.
Thank you for coming over as well. I know you're busy trying to get around AgQuip, but tell us about the family farm. How long have you been back there?
Well,
scale of it.
I left school in 1983.
Oh, good year.
My dad sort of kicked off farming years ago, and we've sort of grown on that, and he set a good legacy. But then, you know, I've got two boys coming along, and you know, you've got to you just got to keep them going too. It's terrific though.
Yeah. So what do you grow? Are you on the Liverpool Plains?
Yeah, on the Liverpool Plains at Brosa.
Yep, beautiful. Yeah. And mixed
cotton of wheat, sorghum, chickpeas, canola.
Yeah.
Usually whatever's making a profit.
What's that been this year?
Yeah.
Well, what does it mean to you and the family to be announced as the Brownhill Cup?
Oh, I'm very honoured. Very honoured. It, as Gordy said, it's whether you're conscious of... The research ideas that go along, you've nearly got to be part of that to, you know, you won't go anywhere otherwise. You know, you've got to know what's going on, you know, be at the coalface of agriculture, and that's one way of being there, I suppose, with research that goes on.
Yeah, and partnering with them as well. I guess they can't do it all in a lab. They need to test at a broad scale.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, eventually it gets out in the paddock, and it's good to be a part of that part out in the paddock.
What was it that set you apart? Should I ask Gordon of that, or should I ask you, what have you been doing on the farm to really push the boundaries of
innovate? Well, you know, there's always another disease or rust or, you know, variety comes along, or, you know, the way you can apply fertiliser or another element that's important to growing a particular crop. And if you don't find out what's going on there, you won't fix it or make the crop better anyway.
Have you put any new varieties in this year? I mean, it's a pretty tough old year, really.
Well, part of that, actually, we're growing a new seed variety for a seed company, so that's one part. We'll get a good look at it. And there's a few different cotton varieties coming along, which sort of got to the broader area scale that we'll try this year as well.
Yeah, okay.
Don't ask me the numbers of them.
They've probably all got too many numbers.
Oh, I should remember them. They're in my diary somewhere.
It'll probably go over my head too, don't worry. Dave Tudgy with us this afternoon on the New South Wales Country Hour. I mean, what have you been able to get in there on the plains? Everyone talking that in the north that it's quite scaled back, your winter planting.
Well, we missed the canola window. It was a bit dry. back in April, late April. But yeah, we've got wheat and chickpeas in, we have.
Yeah. And how are they looking?
All right, yeah, pretty good. We're hanging on there. Be nice to see a good fall of rain come along.
Yeah. What's happening on the chickpea market at the moment? That always seems to...
Yeah, it seems like it's just pushing up nicely.
Lovely. That's good to hear. Yeah. And wheat?
Yeah, it's sort of holding in there steady.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Because how would you place this year's crop in terms of, I guess, expense and your concerns about the returns at the end, given all diesel, fertiliser costs at the start?
Yeah, we probably won't spend the disease management, spend as much on that side of things. You know, it was quite wet last year. And it's probably got a bit too wet for us last year.
And
the chickpeas, well, they're only young too, so no doubt they'll have some treatments, or there's one coming up here in the next few days on them. But, the dry year, so every year seems to be different.
That's it. Well, that keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. No set pattern. You've got to go with whatever the weather deals up to you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, congratulations again on winning the Brown Hill. And it sounds like, you've got a lot on there. And how young are the boys? Are you ready to pass it? Passing it to them?
Yeah, they can go for their life. They're 29 and 31, so well in their prime to take their own.
There you go. Well, I thought they were only in primary school or something. So there you go. We all look good on radio, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Did you saying all the right things, Amelia?
Dave, thank you so much for joining us. And the sunnies are coming off. No, congratulations
thank
again.
You.
It's I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Gordon, coming back to you. Are you still on the Liverpool Plains there? What's the family place looking like?
Yeah, no, it's all right. It's a bit. I think Dave's given us the agronomy. Look about it. I think as we get older, we sort of get a little concerned about where the world is heading and all that sort of stuff. And we're still happy and we're still alive. And it's a beautiful sunny day here. We could be in the rain, really, could we?
True.
Like last year, or wind, or So it's all good.
I wanted to say, make hay while the sun is shining.
Exactly.
So we'll have to go with that. But what's been exciting you as you walk around? No doubt, checking out the new big machines and.
Well, look, I could digress. I was quite amazed yesterday when I was walking out, and there was a guy up there with a heap of sheep dogs and the sheep. Now, he had 100 people looking at those dogs and sheep. So you've got all the machinery. You've got Case and John Deere and New Holland and Caterpillar and whatever else. But that really grabbed me because I've never really seen sheep dogs work that well, as well as what they were. And they were all just looking at him and they were intense. So might have digressed out. He most probably never thought something like that was coming. But
Do you need a working dog at your place or is it all cropping?
No, I don't think. No sheep. No sheep on the Liverpool Plains, so ag quip, and it's most probably just the people. You just see people and go around and see people you haven't seen for a while, and there's something will jump out at you, and you think, how good's that?
When we drove in, I saw the historical display, and I thought, that would be good if we could bring one of those little old headers up near some of the big stuff. Quite the comparison.
Well, it is. And, like in 1983, just think of 1983, some of those machines there now, what a harvester stripped in 1983, these are doing an hour. Dave, how much was a header in 1983?
I don't know. Like I said, I just left school.
You weren't buying headers then.
That wasn't on my radar then, Gordy.
Probably not seven figures.
The computers and technology is just amazing. And that's just one part of agriculture. And then you've got, all sorts of different stuff here. So, it's not a boring day, I can tell you.
Never is. And we appreciate you stepping away from it to join us on the Country Hour.
No worries.
Thank you so much, Gordon Brownhill.
Thank you.
And the Brownhill winner this year, Dave Tudgey, thank you.
Thanks, Mila.
Thank you. Let you go and enjoy yourselves. Thank you, gentlemen. It is 12 minutes to one on the New South Wales Country Hour. We'll have the market information for you soon. But you just never know who you're going to run into down here at AgQuip, do you? And from just down the road from me at Scone is Jane Hegarty from Caslis. Come on over. Oh, we're about to hear some stories. I'll turn the microphone away. They might not be for broadcast. But Jane Hegarty, you have made the trek over. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Amelia.
How did you go on the roads getting from Caslis here? Because
Getting from Caslis here, we actually avoided the Golden Highway, which is the issue with the roads. But, yes, so the trip here was fine. And we've got The Golden Highway, now that they've sent the first week of wind blades for the Ungulla wind farm out, has actually exacerbated some of the issues that locals have been talking about for a number of years with Transport New South Wales and EnergyCo. So we've had hold-ups of 20 minutes on the highway, children have got to school late, we've had people getting to work late, and this is only the beginning because it's only one load per day at the moment, and we know with the cumulative impacts heading west, we're going to have a lot more loads coming our way. We've got Tilt Renewable Wind Farm, Liverpool Plain, they've got 173 blades coming. We know that if Valley of the Winds, the court case is resolved, they will have 131 towers being built, and we know that we've still got the Spicer Creek Wind Farm as well, so it's going to grow. And so what we're experiencing at the moment is minimal compared to what the cumulative impacts will be on the Golden Highway.
And people right around the state, I mean, these blades are coming in at the Port of Newcastle, so passing through the Hunter there to the Arana Res, but whether, you know, we've got those five renewable zones across the state, so we will all probably see this big movement. What do you hope that the state government or Transport New South Wales takes away from what you have seen locally?
Well, I think the problem is that we've got, you know, 30% of our GDP income for New South Wales comes from agriculture. 5% of that income is spent in regional Australia, and Wollongong and Newcastle are considered regional. So we actually need some realistic amounts of money spent on our regional highways. We've got the Great Western Highway, which is limping along at the moment. So freight's been impacted on that road. We've got the Golden Highway, which now is being impacted by renewable energy developments. 30% of the transport on that highway is freight. So we know that that's going to decrease productivity and increase costs for people freighting produce west or freighting produce to the urban areas. And now, if we can't resolve some of these problems, our costs are going to go up. So we'd like to see Transport New South Wales be realistic about putting in some climbing lanes on the Golden Highway. We have one climbing lane being built just west of Merriwood. There are no more climbing lanes heading west all the way to Dubbo. So we know that people caught behind these loads are going to be travelling slowly along that highway. And because it's not only going to be one blade movement, it's going to be a lot of other blade movements as well when the cumulative impact happens. And we still have the mining OSOM loads as well on that highway. So it is going to become a real issue.
Well, we'll keep following it up. And I know Jenny Aitchison, she's never a stranger to joining us on ABC Local Radio, the Transport Minister, so we might follow that up. But thank you for sharing your experience with us over the last few weeks, Jane.
Thank you, Amelia, and let's hope we can get something resolved.
Yes, thank you so much. Jane Hegarty joining you. She's a Cassless local out on the western edge of the Hunter there, but you just never know who you will run into here at AgQuip, where we are broadcasting the New South Wales Country Hour from live today, and it's coming up to about 9 minutes to one.
Every community has stories worth sharing. ABC Your Say is your chance to join the conversation. Tell us what's on your mind. Visit abc.net.au/yoursay.
Let's head off to the markets now, starting at Casino today with Doug Robson.
Good afternoon. Numbers were down slightly for a yearling of 1,250 head, consisting of a good supply of young cattle, and there was a few less cows. Quality is fairly good, with several runs of cattle again showing good condition and weight, and also good lines of well-bred weaners through the sale. The market improved again this week, with restocker weaner steers and heifers selling 20 cents dearer, with some variation at times. Restocker weaner steers sold from 422 to 576 cents, with the median weights averaging 513. Restocker weaner heifers range from 360 to 450, and the median weights average 414. Yearling steers to background topped at 532, and the yearling heifer sold up to 472. There was a few pence of grown steers and heifers. The grown steers topped at 414, and the grown heifers, they sold up to 394. The cow market, it varied, with light store cows 10 cents cheaper in places, while the medium weight two score cows saw little change. They sold from 320 to 348, three scores averaged 352. And heavy cows, they were 10 cents dearer, selling from 362 to 390. Bull market held generally firm, topping at 407 cents for the heavyweights. Doug Robson at Casino.
Let's head off to Carcor Sheep and Lambs, Rob Pearce.
Good afternoon. Lamb supply remains steady for 3,300. Quality is very good for the well-finished lines, while the remainder lacked condition, and they're mainly trade and extra heavies. The lighter grades were limited in number. Medium and heavy trade lambs were 2 to 5 dearer. 20 to 22s sold from 254 to 274, 22 to 24, 273 to 288, averaging 1190 to 1200 cents. Heavyweights were firm to 7 cheaper, 24 to 26, 291 to 312, 26 plus 312 to a top of 354.20, averaging 1100 to 1160 cents. And mutton numbers increased by 500 for 1500. Quality was varied, some heavy sheep were offered, prices eased 10. Heavy first cross ewes sold from 195 to 290, averaging 780 to 815 cents. And this has been Rob Pearce from the CTLX at Carcor.
He's on double time again today. Rob joining us now live from Cowra. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Amelia. Numbers lifted by 1,000 for 3,750 lambs. Quality improved with the well-finished trade and heavies in good condition. There were mainly trades pen, a run of heavyweights, and 1,100 new seasons were offered. Trade weight new seasons eased $5, 22 to 24 kilos, sold from 272 to 286, averaging 1,140. Trade old lambs eased 9, 22 to 24, 260 to 288, averaging 1,130 cents. Heavyweights were 8 cheaper, 24 to 26, 278 to 305, 26 to 30, 327 to 330, 30 plus, 348 to a top of 360, averaging 1050 to 1135 cents. And mutton numbers increased by 950 for 1300. Prices improved for heavy mutton. Heavy merino ewes sold from 192 to 285, averaging 765 to 855 cents. And this has been Rob Pearce from Cowra.
Thanks so much, Rob. We head off to Yass Sheep and Lamb now. Graham Richard reports.
Good afternoon. Lamb numbers lifted to 6,630. The quality improved with good numbers of trade and heavyweights. There were less store lambs and just a few pens of new seasons. The market sold to a cheaper trend with a couple of orders not in place. The few pens of new season trade sold from 255 to 288 and they averaged 1160 to 1185. Old trade lambs were back 10 to 15. The 20 to 24 kilos, 226 to 268, and most range between 1080 and 1130. The 24 to 26 kilos, 252 to 286, or around 1080. Heavyweights, 281 to 324, or 1050 cents on average. An extra heavies topped at $340. Heavy merino lambs reached $310 to average 940. Mutton numbers doubled to 4,230. Prices were also cheaper. The heavy crossbred ewes reached 301 and the best merinos 292 and most range between 770 and 830.
To Mossvale now with the cattle report. David Kent, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Numbers continued to decrease for a total yielding of 1,092 mixed quality cattle. There were some excellent quality grain assisted yieldings to suit the trade, along with some well-bred heifers to suit the feedlot buyers and restockers, along with some plainer types of young cattle. All the regular buyers were operating, selling to a firm to slightly easier market. Prime Verlas topped at 575 cents, trade yearlings 452 to 566, feeder steers back 10, quality related 470 to 536, heifers to feed lifted 6, reaching 538 to average 495. Young cattle returning the paddock attracted strong competition. Steers 390 to 624, heifers reached 512. Heavy ground cattle, too few to quote. The 170 mixed quality cows, price unchanged. Heavy prime cows topped at 412 to average 395. Lighter and leaner cows, 300 to 385. Heavy bulls to process up 375 to 458 cents per kilo. This is David Kent at Mossvale for MLA.
And finally this afternoon, we head off to Singleton, where Angus Barlow has the report.
Good afternoon. Numbers remain static as Singleton agents yarded 597 cattle. Mixed market trends throughout, which was cheaper for steer weaner calves, whilst weaner heifer calves reversed that trend. Yearling steers and heifers on par with last week and cows sold to mostly cheaper rates. Light steer calves, 410 to 586 cents a kilo, averaging around 546 to be 10 cents a kilo cheaper. Light heifer counterparts, 300 to 528 to be firm to 2 cents a kilo better off, while some medium weight heifer calves over 280 kilos improved 20 cents and more in places selling between 400 and 538 cents. Yearling steers to both restock and feed, 436 to 510. Yearling heifers, 386 to 496. Around 90 cows offered lighter two scores, 230 to 330. Heavy prime three and four scores slipped 8 to 11, trading between 344 and 396 cents a kilo. Angus Barlow for MLA at Singleton.
And thank you to all our market reporters. You've been listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. Amelia Bernasconi with you live from Gunnedah at AgQuip. We'll be back here tomorrow. But stay listening this afternoon, coming up after the news at 1 o'clock on The World Today. We've had some of the worst fires on record, mud the European summer, and now experts are cautioning it could happen here this bushfire season. That all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Back here tomorrow, we might try and take a closer look at the machinery side of things, because it's not AgQuip without the big toys. So we'll have a look at that for you tomorrow. But off to find the best of the best steak sandwiches. We'll report back tomorrow between 12 and 1 o'clock. Thanks so much for your company this afternoon on the New South Wales Country Hour.